For many Hoosiers, the debate over smoking in public places is a no-brainer. Given that secondhand smoke is a known killer, they reason, state government has an obligation to do everything possible to minimize the danger. For others, though, the debate hinges not on health concerns, but on the role of government, or more specifically, government regulation, in the private sector and in the lives of individuals. Their take, if adults want to smoke and the people around them know and accept the risk, they should have the right to do so. With such strong feelings on both sides of the issue, it's no wonder the legislative push to ban smoking in public places has stalled year after year. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and we'll plunge into the long smoldering debate over a proposed statewide smoking ban on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
In Indiana's largest city, there is a park where scientists bring ideas to life, where there is a growing community of like-minded innovators backed by the resources of a world-renowned university, the Purdue Research Park, Indianapolis. The idea economy is here.
This is the sixth time that Representative Charlie Brown has authored or co-authored legislation to ban smoking in most workplaces and enclosed public settings in Indiana. The measure has passed the House, but it's never made it to the governor's desk. This year, encouraged by the bans imposed by more than two dozen other states, Brown is hoping it's a different outcome. And Governor Mitch Daniels has indicated he'll sign the bill if he gets it. Will this be the year that Indiana says no to smoking in public places? Joining me to talk about the issue, the person I just mentioned, Democratic Representative Charlie Brown of Gary, the ranking minority member of the House Public Health Committee, Republican Senator Ron Alting of Lafayette, chairman of the Senate Public Policy Committee, which took up the measure this week, Kevin O'Flaherty, director of advocacy for the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids and co-chair of the Indiana Campaign for Smoke-Free Air, and Indianapolis public affairs consultant Brad Kloffenstein, head of the Tavern League of Indiana and former executive director of the Libertarian Party of Indiana and the Indiana Licensed Beverage Association, respectively. And I thank you all for being here for this discussion.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Well, the intro started with you, Charlie Brown, so we'll start the conversation with you. 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011. Is this the year?
Yes, this is the year. I'm very, very thankful and appreciative of the assistance by the governor who weighed in on this issue and the president pro tem of the Senate as well as the Speaker of the House. All have indicated they are supportive of smoke-free air and that they would be more than happy if this were the year.
Is that, if you had to identify a factor that spelled the difference this year, is it the governor's enthusiastic support?
Without a doubt. I mean, for him to make it a part of his state of the state address, I mean, that to me indicated. There's some other factors too. When you think about us hosting the Big Ten basketball tournament a couple of years ago, and there was a lot of discussion about that. The various states coming here and shocked and surprised that we still allowed smoking, and then there was talk about trying to get this out ahead, the bill passed prior to the Super Bowl. That did not
occur. You didn't like that, though. I saw you quoted as saying that made you mad that there was this push for the Super Bowl.
Right, as opposed to it just doing it as a public policy issue, not saying that, hey, we need to do this because we are the host of the Super Bowl.
Senator Ron Alting, I mentioned in the introduction that this has been through the House before, but this is the first time that the full Senate will be able to debate this measure. Largely because your committee voted it out this week on an 8-2 vote without any additional exemptions. Committee chairs never surprised by what happens in committee, but surprised by the track of the bill thus far this session. And do you agree with Charlie Brown that this is the year?
I work real well with Representative Brown and the authors in the House. We kind of had an agreement. Let's try to get this bill continue to move through the process. So I kept the bill clean with exception of a technical amendment, knowing that I think we had the votes to get it out and bring it to the floor. So we were very proud for the first time in the history of the Senate that we moved the bill, and it will be on second reading next week.
And you pointed out, I saw after the committee hearing is saying that now 50 people will be able to weigh in with amendments and so forth, and what I presume would be additional calls for exemptions.
Well, I think that's a fair assessment. We had over 4 hours of testimony, and I think that although the health issue will always remain and should remain at the top of public policy, why you have a smoking ban, I think in the Senate that what you're going to hear more so, because I think everybody understands that. Nobody needs to be sold that secondhand smoke is bad. It's bad. It kills. Smoking kills you. But I think really the debate and listening to how it went in committee will be on rights and the rights of the smoker, the rights of the non-smoker, and the real big one I think is going to be in the Senate, the rights of the business, on them to choose what they can do and what they cannot do versus government telling them. And I think that that's really going to be the core debate on the Senate floor, is that right issues for all three equally.
And so among your 49 Senate colleagues, you're convinced that the notion of secondhand smoke being dangerous or not, that's off the table. You think we can stipulate that every member of the Senate? I think so.
I mean, we have on both sides of the aisle very intelligent people, men and women, that understands the statistics there. Nobody needs to be sold.
I know the U.S. Surgeon General, I think, was back in, 2006, yeah, said the debate's over. These are the facts.
And I think that's it. I think 10 years ago the debate would have been on, yes, does secondhand smoke really cause problems? But I think that's a moot issue today.
Kevin O'Flaherty, you were among the people who were filling those 4 hours of testimony. There were different angles expressed. You heard the senator talk about perhaps what would have been the prominent issue in the past and what it's morphed into now. Give us your 30-second argument why this needs to become law.
I think why it needs to become law is a simple argument. It takes 2 seconds. Workers need to be protected from a real threat to them in the workplace. And I think one of the problems in this discussion today, actually, as well as the broader discussion, is that more people are talking about, well, the rights of non-smokers to breathe clean air and the rights of smokers to be able to smoke. And that's not what this is about, not on any level. This is about protecting workers' health. You have a real threat in workplace environments across the state. And that's the only reason we are here. That is what drives this process. It is what has driven the process in all 29 other states that have passed this law. It's not about the rights of non-smokers to go out and have a smoke-free night at a bar, although that's a great ancillary benefit if you're a non-smoker. It's about protecting those workers. And I think that until we're all actually identifying that as the real issue, that's where we're going to have these hang-ups. You know, Senator Alting talked about how 10 years ago we were talking about whether this was a threat or not. And I think people knew, but we were holding on, or some folks were. So now we've moved on to this. But frankly, and I think it's Senator Taylor mentioned this yesterday, it's another smoke screen. This isn't about smokers' rights versus non-smokers' rights. It's about protecting workers. We do it on every other level when there's a real threat to them in the workplace.
And you mentioned the 29 states that have enacted smoking bans. I guess if you look at that, though, it falls into subcategories. There are those that include restaurants and bars and fraternal clubs. Others don't. Where would Indiana, if the bill were enacted as it emerged from Senator Alting's committee, where would Indiana stack up among those? What would then be 30 states, I guess?
That's right. So 29 states now cover all restaurants and bars. There's a smaller set of that, 23, that cover all workplaces, restaurants, and bars. And within those 20, those we would call fully comprehensive. On our map, those are green states. And within fully comprehensive, a lot of those states, there are variations on things like non-tribal casinos, private clubs. There's a little bit of variation on nursing homes and things like that. If Indiana passed the bill as it left Senator Alting's committee yesterday, Indiana would be a green state. And that's important because it's, you know, and Brad yesterday, and I respect where you're coming from on this and your concerns, but, you know, this really isn't about going after bars. This is about having a consistent law as possible across as broad a spectrum of Indiana businesses as possible so we can protect as many workers as possible.
You mentioned Brad. Let me introduce Brad Klopfenstein, a man of many hats, at least in the past decade in Indiana politics, currently the Tavern League of Indiana, which is about 1,300 members. Respond to what was just said. Obviously, you're focusing on the rights issue as opposed to the health issue.
Right. Well, and sadly, I wish it was like Kevin said, that this was about all workplaces and smoking in all workplaces, but it always boils down to bars, and bars seem to be the cutoff. And if it's truly about protecting workers' health, there should be no exemptions. As soon as you add an exemption, that means the government's playing favorites. If you look, casinos, bars, OTBs, private clubs, they're all in the leisure industry. They all do basically the same function. You go there to get a drink, get a sandwich, hang out with your friends, spend some money. You've got gambling, whether it's pull tabs or, you know, horses or slot machines. They all do the same thing. And suddenly to say, we're going to exempt casinos, no TVs, and private clubs, but we're going to draw a hard line at bars, that's disingenuous to the argument.
So just to make sure I understand, so if this were 100% across the board, no exemptions, now put your libertarian hat on for a minute, would you support this wholeheartedly, or would you still have reservations?
It would be better than it stands right now. As it stands right now, this, in my opinion, is the worst of all worlds. Ideally, the libertarian in me would like to see no smoking ban. I mean, it's pretty easy to tell when somebody's smoking. If you don't want to be around it, don't go near it.
How about the employees, though? I mean, do they have that option? I guess you could say they don't need to apply in the first place.
Right. Well, and I also own part of a bar, so another hat. But as part of that, there's not a single employee that's come in and applied for a job, asked me for a job, who didn't know that we allowed smoking in that facility. They freely came in, and they asked me and said, Brad, would you give me a job? And when I say yes, here's what we do. We sell beer, we sell hamburgers, and we allow smoking. If this is acceptable to you, welcome aboard.
But if some bars have, and I don't mean to debate the issue, I just want to get this pot stirred here a little bit, but some bars, high-profile bars in Indianapolis, have taken it upon themselves to demand to ban smoking, and I presume they think they'll still make a decent buck when all is said and done.
And that's a good market decision. And I think ultimately, 10 years from now, there will not be smoking in bars anywhere, just because that's the way the market's going. But some establishments can do that now. Others won't be able to do it for a year or two, but we're going that way. If you remember when we were all kids, you could smoke in McDonald's. They had those little foil ashtrays that were out on the table, and McDonald's made a market decision that we're not going to allow smoking in here anymore. Bars are doing that.
My objective is total smoke-free, but our children don't get up from the womb and walk. You know, a lot of things happen between in mother's arms and walking and knocking things over on the tables. That's my position. We have got to crawl before we walk to get to the point of smoke-free air. I think the most compelling testimony yesterday, which leads to that argument, was, I don't know what community the gentleman was, a very small community, and he says, in my community there are either 6 or 9 private clubs and 3 bars, one of which I own. You could automatically determine what's going to happen. He's going to obviously go out of business if the bill stays as is with the exemption for the private clubs. And those are the kinds of heart-wrenching things that should get us to the point of, we got to have the level playing field that there's no smoking anywhere.
Of course, bars and taverns are going to get, again, things can happen between now and when the session is gaveled to close, sine die. There's an 18-month.
Yes.
That what you describe as the learning to walk phase, I guess.
I wish I could have spent more time with that report from Illinois. And that's what our casino industry hangs its hat on. Look what happened in Illinois. They're losing revenue galore. That's not the case. It's not that they went smoke-free in the casinos. It's the economy and a lot of other factors in there that has caused Illinois to lose some revenue as a result of going smoke-free.
I don't often disagree with Charlie Brown, and definitely not publicly, but if you got a city, a small town in Indiana with 3 bars and 6 private clubs, and these 3 bars aren't going to allow smoking, I guarantee you none of those bars are going to go out of business. You know, I know the fears are there. The fears are real.
Kevin, but are you willing to guarantee that?
Because it just hasn't happened anywhere else.
But
the business
but you don't have any skin
up
in that game.
I don't. You're right. And that's why I'm not coming here from a fear, and because I might lose my business or anything else. And that's why I understand the incredible passion that's on your side here, because this is their livelihoods. But every state that's done this, business goes up in all of the sectors, including bars and taverns. And I'm not just talking about revenue, I'm talking about employment. And 80% of the people in Indiana do not smoke. They're all going to flock to places that are filled with smoke in a town with 6 smoking establishments and 3 non-smoking establishments. That's not going to happen. It isn't. I hate to disagree with you, but it won't.
Senator Alton, you represent Lafayette, and there are a few bars, I think, up there. And you're also a former, I believe, a licensed beverage association legislator of the year, maybe awarded by the gentleman sitting next to you back when he was wearing that hat. So how do you respond to a
Well, I've got legislator of the year on both sides.
Okay, well, that's the way to do things, I guess, when you get over both sides. But how do you respond to these concerns from tavern owners who say, you know, you're gonna kill me, you're gonna put me.
Well, you know, I've heard from tavern owners, for instance, where the locals have decided to go non-smoking and the adjacent county is smoking, and according to them, they've lost the business. So I do think that in order to be fair for all businesses, you probably got to do exactly what Representative Brown and my friend suggesting. It's just got to be level playing field across there. But the problem with that is that there are exceptions to the rule. And some of the fraternal order clubs, for instance, the American Legion, it's worded in the bill, if you're 17 years of age or less, if you vote to go smoking, you can't enter the building ever. So that means your Legion baseball team that I was guest speaker at in the non-smoking room of the Legion will not be able to have their banquet. It means as a son of a Legion membership, that means that they're going to have to meet somewhere else outside of the facility versus in the non-smoking room.
Or when weddings or any kind of...
If a Legionnaire who fought for our country has a retirement dinner or his 50th wedding anniversary in the non-smoking room of the Legion, his grandchildren won't be able to come. So I think we need to take a strong look at that. The Eagles, who I represent on Friday nights, who's the middle-class country club. These are hardworking people that when they get home, they shower, they put their golf shirt, jeans on. They take the kids. There's no babysitters. They go to the Eagles in a non-smoking room, listen to a band, have a dinner, watch the kids dance on the dance floor, and that's entertainment. In this bill, they couldn't do that.
So you're saying no exemptions except for maybe fraternal organizations.
I am very much for fraternal organizations, because any time that there's kids in it 17 years of age or less, they're in a non-smoking area of the facility.
Well, in Indianapolis, we've seen where City County Council has passed legislation that would ban something similar to what we're seeing at the state level, and Mayor Greg Ballard vetoed it precisely because of the concern that Senator Alting mentioned, this notion of veterans groups, VFW halls, and American Legion halls. Does that argument carry any weight with you, are you going to say tough?
In the Senate, you have to get 26 votes. In the House, you have to get 51. In the legislature is all about the friendly art of compromise, and we are not going to get what I am not going to get what I want this year. We're going to have to come back and chip away. I will live with the bill as it is, but understanding that there are those that have arguments like Senator Alting, and there will be others. Surprisingly, an argument came up yesterday about exempting nursing homes even. I said, my goodness, So that's the reality of the Indiana General Assembly.
In the past, though, was it last year, you said you withdrew the bills because you didn't like all the exemption, and you said it basically has been pecked to death. I don't need to worry about it. Why the change in strategy this year? It seems as if you're much more willing to tolerate it this year than you've been in the past.
Because I accept the fact that I'm not going to get everything that I want in one setting, that I'm willing to accept what is here today and come back tomorrow and move slowly, gradually. Like I said, a kid crawls before they walk.
Now, you mentioned the importance of 51 votes in the House and 26 in the Senate. Of course, if the Senate changes this dramatically, we're really talking about four people in conference committee where the real fireworks could start, and that basically, as we often see, is a session compressed into a few hours or a period of days. Brad Klopfenstein, what are you prepared to do to sway opinion and get the ear of lawmakers, especially perhaps conference committee members, on this issue?
A lot of it is just turn out our members. We've had members all over the state, and we've been urging them to contact their elected officials, and certainly the conferees, as they would stand right now. So, a lot of it's just, expressing your views. And, and I think everybody here knows that a lot of times it's making sure that people know that you've got public opinion on your side.
And now, Kevin O'Flaherty, I think you'd probably say you have public opinion on your side.
Well, and I think we all know that we do, that among the general public, and we just actually commissioned a poll 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, when we were right before the House floor vote. Highest number ever, 70%. Of registered voters in Indiana support passing a smoke-free law that protects workers in all workplaces, restaurants, bars, and public places. And those four things were listed in the question. And that's 70%. The highest number before, I think, was 66%. I think the reason that keeps going up is focus on the local cities that are passing and are trying to pass, like Indianapolis and Evansville, which just passed a comprehensive law.
Bloomington
has had one for a long time. That's right. Elkhart has one. A lot of cities around the states. I think there's almost two dozen that have what we would call comprehensive laws. I think the governor, as Charlie indicated earlier, the governor voters' support, I think, has brought more attention to the issue and probably bumped those numbers up a little bit. But the public gets this. And the problem is, and we're talking about the skin in the game, your guys come out because they're passionate, they care, they're really fearful of this impacting their bottom line. The public cares about this, they get it. But, you know, aside from, you know, it's not quite as many. Their skin is not in that game, except for the workers.
You telling bar owners that this is going to be good for their business is like my beer sales rep coming in saying you need to carry Sam Adams because you're going to make more money. Just because they say it doesn't mean it's going to be true.
I mean, Brad, you're involved with a tavern association. I know you have colleagues in other states that have gone smoke-free.
Yes, and they've all told me don't let it happen in Indiana.
The bottom fell out. Is that what you're saying?
Look at Michigan. Michigan, just a year ago, went smoke-free in bars, not casinos. Casino revenue was up 10%. Bar revenue was down 10%. That's not an accident.
Yeah, I think those were early numbers. I think it's coming back to normal now. And you do see a hiccup in the first few months while the public
gets
used to it.
Have you ever done a poll asking Hoosiers to just break it down? Do you think that in bars at 21 years of age and older that people go to, should they be smoking or non-smoking or given the right to make that decision on their own?
We've asked those questions in polls, you know, similarly, and there is majority support. When you ask a question along the lines of if the legislature in so-and-so state passes a smoke-free law, should it include bars? And when you ask that specific question, the support rate comes down a little bit from your high number, I think, because people are focusing. Yeah. But it is still majority.
Okay. And don't forget the objective is to protect the workers.
The workers, that's right.
More than likely, in those bars, they do not provide insurance coverage for those
individuals.
Then
let's ask them. Every one of my workers has to be licensed. The state knows who they are. Let's ask them what they want.
Well, then get out in the field. Let's have a poll. We'll come back and see what the results of that are. Unfortunately, as I knew we ran out of time. We could go on and on. I won't make any predictions except one I know will come true, and that is it's going to be a lively discussion on second reading on the Senate floor. We look forward to that discussion, and I thank you for this discussion here today. Again, my guests have been Democratic Representative Charlie Brown of Gary, Republican Senator Ron Alting of Lafayette, Kevin O'Flaherty of the Indiana Campaign for Smoke-Free Air, and Brad Klopfenstein of the Tavern League of Indiana. They say nothing is certain but death and taxes. On the next Indiana Lawmakers, we're not talking about death. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter, Indiana Legislative Insight. Well, Ed, you heard Charlie Brown. His prediction after five unsuccessful years in the legislature, he said no ifs, ands, or buts, pun intended, that this is the year. Is he right?
It still has a tough road to hoe in the Senate. They've got a lot of work ahead of them. There are going to be a lot of amendments that will ostensibly be to help the bill along, but will be some of them intention to actually kill the thing because they don't need so many exemptions. If you have more exemptions, it becomes more difficult to pass again in the House, and you load the thing down, and you never know what's going to happen. It is not a sure thing yet.
And as we mentioned during the roundtable, if it's loaded down or up with amendments, that means it's going to be different from the House version of the bill, which means conference committee. Is that really where this is going to be decided?
I believe so, and I think that's probably a good thing for the bill, for the potential passage of the bill, because I think outside of the white heat of the public spotlight and the need to posture and the need to, you know, help some individual constituents or constituencies, this bill can get settled and will be settled in a form that will be acceptable to both houses eventually. But it's not going to be easy.
And you heard Charlie Brown give a lot of credit to the governor. How important do you think Mitch Daniels' backing is and it has been in this debate thus far?
It was very important. I think the one thing that was particularly interesting in the Senate Public Policy Committee hearing this last week was the testimony of State Health Commissioner Greg Larkin. And senators made a particular point of questioning him very insistently about the matter of the exemptions. And Dr. Larkin made it clear that the governor would sign a bill even if it had no exemptions, and actually might even prefer a bill with no exemptions. The fact that the governor stood that strong behind that kind of a bill, I think, made a real statement to, in particular, senators at this point.
And in all likelihood, and again, I know you said nothing certain, and we'll stipulate that, but if this does get to the governor's desk, best guess on what exemptions would be in there, do you think?
I think it would probably be some minimal exemptions like you saw come out of the House, the casino exemptions, something for the fraternal organizations and perhaps private clubs as well. Something a little bit between what Mayor Ballard wasn't real happy with in the Indianapolis ban and what they've been talking about in particular in the Senate.
Okay, one other topic. We got everybody's talking this week, of course, about Representative Bob Morris from Fort Wayne and the headlines he made by refusing to go along with a resolution honoring the 100th birthday of the Girl Scouts, saying that they are an organization that supports abortions and promotes homosexuality. Got a lot of attention and a lot of laughs around the country. Any lasting fallout from that?
I think that he certainly has been chastised by, you know, his speaker, members of the caucus, and the one thing that really came out of this for me was the way that Speaker Brian Bosma handled it. He has gotten universal plaudits for the way that he treated the issue. Representative Morris distancing himself and his caucus from Representative Morris on this, and really putting the focus back on the Girl Scouts where everything belonged.
And the way he distanced himself was by munching on Girl Scout cookies from the rostrum at the front of the chamber.
Thin mints, not thick skin.
Yeah. I've always been a thin mint sucker myself. Thanks, Ed. As always, we appreciate your insight. For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And you can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from both Xfinity and Bright House networks. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwantes. We're back again next week. Until then, take care.
This year marks the 50th anniversary of the Purdue Research Park. With four locations across Indiana, 200 companies, and more than 4,000 employees, we have much to celebrate.
Purdue Research Park has a $1.3 billion annual impact for Indiana.
Purdue Research Park, celebrating 50 years of innovation and job creation.